Hey, I'm Terry Foy.
And I'm Nick Osello. Welcome to the tailgate.
Oh, what a glorious day it is. It's tailgate time. I'm Terry Foy, back with Nick Osello. The season has not yet started. This is the most savory tailgate of the year. Nick, how you doing, buddy?
I want to start recording these on Tuesday. We're recording this and it's Friday, but Tailgate Tuesday just sounds like a great way to chop up the week, have a couple beers midweek, have an excuse to maybe crack a freshie. And Terry, big news. I've taken a big step back from my alcohol intake. I actually bought my first case of non-alcoholic beer this month. And as I was buying it, I just heard former me in my own ear going, "What are you doing? This isn't the Nick that we know. Go get Coors Light." And I was like, no. And I'm down 4 pounds in January. My body fat percentage is down 3%. And honestly, we'll see what this new health journey has for me. But if it impacts the podcast, let me know and I'll get right back on the sauce. Because I care about you, the listener, more than I care about my own well-being.
And that is the dedication that you can expect from the Tailgate Podcast. I feel like we're opening ourselves up to a new line of sponsors. To your point about Tailgate Tuesday, did you know that in, I think it's either Sweden or Norway, Wednesday is called Saturday Junior and everybody goes out?
No, but I love that. It's Saturday, incredible. Like Diet Saturday?
Yes, correct.
Oh my God. Good for them.
Tailgate Tuesday feels like Kmart Friday. Friday at 5 p.m., Friday beers. It's like the best time of the year. It's incredible. So, yeah, let's talk about this podcast because typically we unpack the weekend that was. Obviously, games have not started yet. That being said, we are going to go through the over-unders for the top 20 teams because DraftKings came out with them for the first time ever, and I love the gimmick of the over-under show. We'll talk a little bit about kind of the relationship to sports betting. Obviously, we are not an anti-vice podcast, as the last 5 minutes have cleared up. That being said, we do promote responsible behaviors, as the last 5 minutes also indicate. Nick, what is your relationship with over-unders?
It starts with, boy, am I glad that these lines weren't available when I was in college. You think this LSU kid was hammering it? Glad that that wasn't a thing. And I've actually been very good. So my family, my dad, both my uncles, the best way that I can describe it is when you go into Caesar's Palace and when you go into the Aria, and when you go into the Bellagio, you go into those sports books, and you see the lines on the screen. And you just see the over-unders, you see all the odds. My uncles helped develop that technology.
Oh, wow.
So from a very early age, I knew that you're fighting an uphill battle. That gambling is fun, but the only way... My uncle Dino... Dino's the best guy I know.
We've heard about Dino. Didn't Dino meet, he went, Matt, why am I blanking his name? The most famous referee that exists.
Matt Palin. Matty Palin. Yes. Him, my dad, and Dino had beers. And Dino always said the only way that you beat the casino is by leveraging their rewards points, not by betting at the sports book.
That is a great lesson. Before we dive in to the bulk of this podcast, we are unveiling a new feature that we're going to try to continue throughout the year. Sunday afternoons, when we typically record, not necessarily going to be the easiest time to get college lacrosse players. Fortunately, Friday morning, and it took me a while to figure it out because you South Bend folks decide that one half of the year you're in the Eastern time zone and another half of the year you're in the Central time zone. But apparently Friday morning, we were able to get the reigning most outstanding player of the NCAA tournament, the goalie for the preseason number one ranked Fighting Irish, Liam Entenmann, is joining us on the Tailgate Podcast. Liam, how's it going?
It's going good, guys. How are you?
I'm good. Thanks for joining us. Apologies for the technical difficulties you experienced getting this going.
No worries.
What's it like to be the best Notre Dame lacrosse player on this podcast?
I don't know. We got a legend, and I guess it says Steve Osello's son on here. Can't be answering that question. I think a different guy's gotta.
Liam, I'm just waiting here.
What do you mean?
I mean, are you gonna say thank you? I mean, I paved the way so that you could win a national championship.
Absolutely. I know. You guys absolutely did. Every guy that came before, you know, my grade certainly paved the way. It was great to see those guys on you know, in the stands that day. Thank you, Nick. I appreciate it.
Okay. Yeah. Okay. Now, Terry, hold on. I just have like two or three actual questions.
Yeah.
So every time that we had a good season, mm-hmm. which was all 4 years for me, no big deal. Yeah. But every time that we got either preseason hype or we were coming off of a good, like made it to the championship, the first thing Corrigan would do was always like, you guys think you're hot shit? Yeah, you guys think you're tough? Let's have the worst preseason conditioning. Let's make this miserable because you guys think you're so good because inside lacrosse preseason ranked you at number one. I've heard that Coach Corrigan has changed a little bit since COVID and kind of taken a little bit of a step back from being, you know, hey, let's all go throw up at preseason conditioning. How has he been so far since actually capturing that ring? Is he doubling down on being relentless, or is it, hey guys, let's build on something great?
I think it's a nice kind of blend of both. I think he's done a very good job of getting us back down to, you know, square one, which is, you know, the only place to start in the fall. I think that we did a good job of that. I've definitely had a rough learning process with the Princeton scrimmage. It was pretty well documented by everybody, as it should have been. But I think that since then, we've done a really good job of getting back to square one and realizing this is a new team, new season. I mean, pretty similar goal, but, you know, obviously a different path, as it is every season. But at the same time, you know, we're still working very hard. I think we've had a good, very productive preseason so far. A lot of guys are making a dent, contributing. I think we have a really deep team this year and excited to see what we can do.
Boy, you've just been overly trained. I almost fell asleep during that response right there. Sorry. One more question. So you just dropped your phone. Your hand's good?
Yeah, I dropped
it. Everything good? Yeah. Okay, good. We're going to need those. Yeah. So it's also a tradition to absolutely blow it in the fall for a preseason for a fall ball scrimmage. We lost to Air Force 1 year. Mm-hmm. A lot of parents. I mean, I'm from Denver. I'm not from Long Island. Mm-hmm. And a lot of parents came out to that. And after we lost to Air Force, it was like coach was yelling at us for like 3 hours, and our parents were pissed off because we couldn't even see them. Like, all these parents came out to Denver, and he's like, you know, you got blah, 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 blah. You know how he gets. And all the parents were pissed. So after you lost to Princeton, was he up your guy's ass, or was he kind of like, all right, we'll rebound, go and talk to your parents?
I mean, I think it was obviously wasn't, you know, happy with how that day went, but I think it was a lot more about the, just our overall attitude going into that scrimmage. I think that, you know, you lose games. We're all athletes. You know, we've all played competitive sports, and you lose games and you lose some close ones. You get blown out once in a while. I think it was more so about our approach to going into that scrimmage and, not taking, you know, kind of the little details as seriously as we did, I guess last year, and certainly reflected in that scrimmage. But I think at the same time, I think what I kind of said to myself, and I said to a bunch of guys on our team, is I think that performance was waiting to happen for us, whether it happened in October or in February. And I think that we've really had a lot of takeaways from that day that are going to help us going forward. Paramount among those is it is a new year. And I think that, you know, I think every team that comes off of how, you know, how we ended the last season has to learn that in one way or the other. And I'm happy that we did that in the fall versus, you know, in February. We've been really, really dialed ever since. There's been very little, if any, levels of complacency. And everyone's super hungry to get back after it and pursue the same goal that every other team's pursuing. I think we have a great attitude and everything.
I'd give anything to just get chewed out by Coach Corrigan again. Enjoy it. Don't never graduate.
Yeah.
Liam, what was the offseason like for you, particularly, like, what, I mean, when it comes to, you know, players in the field, it's kind of a combination of bigger, faster, stronger, and hone your skills. But for goalies, like it's I would imagine like a little bit different in terms of, you know, how you try to build on the foundation that not only you have set for the last 15 years or whatever, but also, you know, the success that you had last season. What did you focus on in terms of trying to get better?
Yeah, it definitely is. I've definitely found it looks a little bit different every year as I get more experience, get a little bit older, hips get a little bit tighter. So there's definitely, it's definitely looked different for me every year. I think this year I'm really just trying to, you know, again, get back to square one. I think I've done that pretty effectively. I don't think I'm certainly not living in any glory from last year anymore. It's, you know, once those first few shots in practice go in, you know, you kind of get a good reset there. I think I've really just been trying to work on my mobility. That's my, honestly, my best answer. I think that, you know, the fifth year hips is a real thing, and I've been trying to really reset those and really try to work on my flexibility and making sure that I'm putting myself in a position to be able to perform at a very high level throughout, not just in preseason, not just the first few games, but the entire season. I think that, you know, I've been fortunate to be in a leadership role now for the second year of this team, and I think that it's on the captains and on the seniors and on the fifth years to keep this team dialed in on what really matters, and making sure that we all realize what our goals are, both long term and I think more importantly short term. I think that, you know, one thing I really like about our culture, and I think Nick, you can probably attest to this, is that Coach Korga doesn't really talk about winning a championship, 4 months from now. He talks about getting a little bit better every single day. I think that we've been doing a better job of that since that scrimmage, and really focusing on those micro goals and realizing that effectively completing those small goals really is that's what leads to the big goal at the end of the rainbow, whatever you want to call it. So I think that personally, and I guess team wise, just focusing on little things that add up to big things.
And Terry, let me just cut in, because credit to me, Liam, as you were talking about the fifth year hips, and yep. You know, I wanted to say, is that what you learned at St. Mary's? But I didn't. I let you finish the sentence. So good job for me, Terry. Continue.
Yeah, for sure.
Liam, you said that. I just don't even want to give him any room to react to that, because that's just, it's what the responsible person does. It's the responsible host. Liam, you said that this is a different team, and it is, yeah. Of course. But earlier this month, we found out that it was actually going to be a little bit more similar than you might have otherwise expected. Chris Collins back after starting a job in June and not being with the team in the fall. What's the deal there, and how nice is it to have another, you know, kind of experienced member of the defense back?
Yeah, it's been great. I mean, Chris came in last year very unassuming, even though he had a lot of success at his prior school. He came in very unassuming and really adapted well to our team, both on the field and certainly off the field as well. He was a great guy to have in the locker room. And I think as great of a player as he is, as great as the guy he is, like, I think that the best addition as far as him coming back is just being in the locker room every day and just helping mentor the younger guys. And, you know, because he's here for 1 year, but I think he realizes, and I certainly realize it, that, you know, the impact that he can have reaches a lot further than this year. Just being able to help develop those younger guys. We have a lot of younger defensemen that, you know, certainly look up to him. I think he's done a really good job of that, and he's hungry. I mean, he wasn't with us in the fall. I think he realized he has the opportunity to come back, and I think he realized after a few months of working that would be, you know, something he wants to do. He's made the most of it, and, you know, super pumped to have him back. He was one of my closest friends on the team last year. Loved having him down on the defensive end in front of me, but I think most importantly, just having a guy and you know, with the character of Chris Conley back in the locker room has been really helpful.
One more for me, and then I'll give it back to Nick. There are two guys in the rope unit that are squaring up to be, you know, if they're not already the best at their position nationally, mm-hmm. coming away from this year, they might be regarded that way, in Ben Ramsey and Will Donovan. Mm-hmm. What have you seen from them so far this month, and how do you forecast what the season could look if they reach their potential?
Yeah, they're both studs. They play a lot of minutes for us in practice, and obviously certainly in games. It's been great to see Rammer step up in a leadership role now that he's, you know, an upperclassman. He's a guy that everyone looks to and is one of the most respected guys on the team, which I think really is a testament to his character and his leadership, being, you know, that he's a junior and pretty much half of our team is seniors and fifth years, and he still is one of the commanding voices in the locker room, and definitely a guy that everyone loves being around. And Will Donovan had an unreal year last year, coming in and was, you know, aside from making arguably the biggest play of the entire season in that check on LaSalle and that overtime faceoff, that was one of the most, you know, unsung hero plays of the entire year. Everyone saw the goal that Jake had and the goal that Tevlin had, but you know, that those goals don't mean anything if Donovan doesn't make that play. And I'm sure Jake and Tevlin can certainly agree with that. He's been, again, stepping into a leadership role, even as a sophomore. He's done a great job of leading his class and leading the younger guys, and has been very, very humble with his success. He hasn't let it get to his head whatsoever, which is a great thing to see, because I'm sure a lot more success is coming for him down the road, and I don't think it's going to change his approach to every day and his mentality at all.
I want to be respectful of your time, so just give me the quick rundown. What's the living situation, who you living with, and where you living with? Let's make this only relevant for Notre Dame folk.
Okay. I'm living in Dublin Village.
It's
a great spot. We kind of have a good setup. There's a good amount of fifth years, both guys that came back and guys that transferred in. So I think there's 13 of us total, 12, 13. Might be blank on the exact number. Oh, no, it's 13, I think. So I'm with Pat Cavanaugh, Max Maniac, and then Danny Parker, who transferred in from UVA. He played with me and Pat on the U21 team the US U21 team a few years back. So we got to know him pretty well there. And once we found out he was coming, you know, we wanted to, you know, make sure that we were bringing him in and making sure that he felt welcomed to our team. And then right down the street, we have another house of four guys, and Marco Napolitano, Riley Gray, Riley Gray, Nick Harris, and then Jake Bonomi amid the Michigan transfer. So kind of try to set it up like a lot of returners. And then we have a guy who's, you know, coming in as a new guy and making sure that he's, you know, living with guys that have been around for a while. And then Jake Taylor has his own house. He's with BJ Burrow.
Son of a real estate agent. Makes sense.
Yeah, he that's his plan. If you ever talk to him, you'll certainly find that out. That's his plan. So he's living with BJ Burleys from Maryland and Devin McLean from Brown. And that's a pretty funny trio right there.
How about the Alabama quarterback?
Oh, Buckner, he's coming great. I mean, you know, Nick, as you always say, it's you know, nobody plays two sports at once in college.
It's a bummer
with Buckner, but no, all kidding aside, he's coming, you know, really unassuming. I mean, yeah, he's obviously experienced college athletics at the highest level that there is. But he has
you have
just like everyone in our locker room, he's been very unassuming. Come in ready to learn, ready to play any and every role that the team asks of him, and he's been a great guy to have as well. He's been, you know, nothing negative to say about Tyler. He's been
got
awesome.
It. Two quick ones. One legitimate, one stupid. So transfer portal wasn't a thing when I was there. We would have maybe like one or two fifth years over my entire 4 years. What is the biggest difference between, and like, I was under the burn method defense and it took me forever to learn because of the intricacies and like how detailed it was.
Right.
When you take like a guy who had success at another program and integrate him into Notre Dame, like how tough is that learning curve for them? Is it sometimes seamless? Is it position dependent? I'm always just so curious because like year after year, it's like, shit, we have a, you know, new quarter of the team from guys that have been learning other systems for the last 3-4 years.
I think it's definitely a bit of a challenge. I wouldn't say it's like it's definitely a challenge. I think that at the same time that we've been very, very fortunate to have guys who have been here for 4 years who are able to teach these guys in the whiteboard and in the film room. And I think Marco Napolitano is a great example of that. I mean, he's a guy who, you know, didn't play much his first few years and was able to be in much more of a role with playing time last year. And he's been, even before he was playing, he was a guy who always was ready to watch film with the younger guys, the new guys coming in, put himself in a spot where, you know, he's being very, very selfless, helping out everyone that he can. I've been in, you know, I'm in the locker room right now. There's plenty of times where I'm sitting right here and he's a few chairs over watching film with a younger guy, making sure that he's doing everything that he can to help those guys develop. So it's definitely, it's, you know, it's not something that you come in and day one in the fall, it's like, we're going to do 66 and those guys just download a file. That is the defense of Notre Dame. It takes time and it takes a lot of trial and error. But I think at the same time, I feel like really making sure that we emphasize that in the long run is helpful, because while we're teaching the new guys, all the other guys are kind of getting on the same page with it as well. It's not, you know, if we're doing a big whiteboard day with the defense, it's not just Marco or Ross or whoever it is and the new guy, it's everyone else in the room. So I think that everyone kind of slowly gets on the same page and the chemistry develops with the whiteboard film, and obviously most importantly on the field.
Got it. And Marco Napolitano, that's a good Irish name right there. Love
yes,
that
very
form.
Irish. Yeah.
Last question. I tweeted out, what's the dumbest question you could ask the best lacrosse goalie in the country? And the one that got the most likes is, what's your favorite thing about the face-off?
About the face-off?
Yeah.
That's an interesting one.
Yeah, I'm drawing a blank too. I hate it. Get rid of it.
Guys win it. That's probably the best part of the face-off. I mean, we have you know, some studs at the face-off X for us. We have Will Lynch, who was incredible for us down the stretch. And Colin Hagstrom came in, always did his job. And we have guys that, you know, didn't get a ton of playing time last year, but like Pat Eilers, Christian Gallagher, and then we have Andrew Greenspan this year. Just a great group of guys. It's funny because I was thinking the other day, like, I think the goalie room at Notre Dame is really, really tight.
You guys are weird.
Yeah.
GST? Is GST still alive?
Yep, goalies stick together.
Nerds.
Yeah, but it's definitely interesting because, you know, the goalie room's really tight and the FOGO room's really tight, but the one difference is the goalies don't beat the crap out of each other every day and the FOGOs do. So it's interesting how tight-knit of a group they are. But, yeah, they're great groups, great personalities, bunch of really funny guys in the locker room, kind of bunch of weird cats just like the goalies are, so I can relate to them there. But it's great. I mean, you know, Will Lynch was incredible for us down the stretch, and so was Haggy. But, yeah, I'd say short answer – when
you can also say I hate it and it's stupid. You can say that.
No, I like it. I like I, you know, I have a front row seat to the face off every time, so I like that piece of it too.
If you're listening to this, he's doing this in air quotes.
No, not gonna get you in trouble. I think it's interesting that the PLL is kind of like making new rules with it every year, with the shot clock and now with the wings. I like it. I personally am a big fan of the overall rules in college. Like, there's no real part of the lacrosse rules in college lacrosse that I'd be like, oh wow, I really hate that. I want to change it. I really like the format of the game right now. I think it's a nice blend of being high paced without being rushed. If that makes sense. I feel like the 80 seconds and if a reset 60 seconds allows for, you know, offense to really develop. And defenses to really settle in without it being too chaotic. I had really nothing negative to say there.
Liam, you have been an excellent guest. Great job making Nick not a terrible interviewer. And we appreciate your time and look forward to watching you play.
Go give Faison and Buckner a little cup check for me. Thanks.
Yeah, we'll do. We'll just, yeah. Yep, from a football lacrosse guy, even though that's not a thing. Yep, we'll do.
All right. Sounds
guys,
good.
Thank you very much for having me on. Appreciate your time. And talk soon. Go Irish.
All right. Go Irish.
Thanks, guys. See ya.
I forgot about that SID training. Oh, my goodness. What a good kid. And hey,
correct.
I had about 15 other really stupid questions that I just wanted to start asking him. So thank you for bringing out a level of professionalism that I'm not accustomed
incapable
to.
Of.
Yeah. So thanks, Terry, for making me the best version of myself.
There you go. All right, Nick, you want to jump in?
I would love to jump in. And so as we were talking about before the Liam Entenmann interview, over-unders. The only way that you win in Vegas is by using the rewards program. So a lot of people just kind of assume by the way that I am, they're like, Nicky, you hitting some parlays today? And I'm like, no, I don't really sports bet. A, I'm broke. B, the worst thing that ever happened to me was I hit the first parlay that I ever placed And then I haven't really been making any sports bets for like the last 5 to 6 years. Everybody has their phase right out of college where it's like, you know, 50 to 100 bucks a weekend. But I don't really do that much anymore. But the over-unders by far are always my favorite, whether it's points and especially the season total wins. It allows us to talk a little smack, make bold predictions. I might get arrested for breaking and entering because I'm picking some locks today. So we'll let you start off with it.
Well, yeah, no, I just want to build on that point. I mean, so there is no question that betting irresponsibly is very dangerous. And whenever I talk to folks about sports betting, I have to talk out of both sides of my mouth, because I do think that having a financial investment is a great way for folks to care about something that they otherwise wouldn't care about. And, you know, my entire life is sports. And so I want as many people to care about sports as possible. And so if being able to bet and have a, you know, financial stake in it is a way to make more people feel that, then that's great. But I'm like you, I don't bet on sports, primarily because my attitude toward when it's appropriate or proper to bet on sports is to make you interested in something that you otherwise wouldn't be interested in. And for me, on the basis of what I just said, that really doesn't exist. Like, I don't need the financial component to give me interest in watching, you know, an NBA game on a Wednesday night or a Premier League game on a Saturday morning. Like, I'm already going to do that. And so, you know, it's kind of like one of those things where I like it as content for the audience, both like generally and then specifically the group that actually does want to make wagers. And I also love it as content because it gives you a really interesting way to talk about the sport, a way that's, you know, kind of reflective of a set of expectations that are different from media voting, for instance, because, like, you know, media voters vote in a very particular way. I think that, you know, that often gets criticized for being political or being uninformed or whatever the case may be. And it's like, well, there's just this deference to, you know, a sports betting based conversation, because the house, in this case, DraftKings, with two exceptions, for whatever reason, I couldn't find over-unders for Richmond, who's number 20, and Notre Dame, who's number one in the Inside Lacrosse preseason media poll. Exactly. So we deferred to Lacrosse References numbers in both of those instances. Thanks to Zach for sending those over to me. But, like, you know, I look forward to all the, you know, conversations about NFL over-unders in August and the conversations about NBA over-unders in October, because, like I said, it frames what is otherwise like a normal preseason preview expectation conversation in a different way. And this gives me an opportunity to get off my second rant, which is, in 2016, we were coming off of another El Nino winter in 2015, and I think that 14 and 15 were both El Ninos. You probably remember this because you were in the middle of it, and it just meant that there was a ton of snow in these February games, and that was also because the sport was expanding south at that time, when you started to see the volume of games in the first and second week of February really start to spike. And, you know, it was in conjunction with some decline in Final Four attendance. And basically, like, I looked at it and said, all of these things are wrapped together. There's no universal start date for practice or games. There should be, right? That helps to level the competitive field. The minimum number of games that you are required to schedule, and we're going to get to this in a second, is 12. The maximum number of games that you're allowed to schedule is 17. That includes spring and fall scrimmages. So that's why, you know, for instance, Duke rarely plays a fall scrimmage so that they can schedule 17 games. And Notre Dame has traditionally scheduled the minimum number of games. And so that variability makes it difficult to talk about this without specifying how many games a team is playing. It is important to note that the over-unders that DraftKings set are only for the regular season scheduled games. Conference tournament games that get added afterwards do not count. NCAA tournament games do not count. So the numbers we're talking about are going to be based on that 12, 13, 14 games. And we're going to specify how many games they have scheduled as we go through team by team. You want to start at the top?
And the reason why I was so quick to say sandwich is because the two overlocks that I have are the sandwiches themselves. So if we want to start with Notre Dame, then by all means, let's just start right there.
Well, obviously, you know, the Notre Dame fans that were listening to the interview just because they wanted to hear where Liam Entenmann lives are going to be satisfied if we start with the Irish.
Oh, yeah. And that question about where he lives, that was from me. That wasn't for you, the listener. That was the only time I was selfish.
What do you say, Dublin Village?
Yeah.
Is that an acceptable answer?
Very acceptable. Dublin Village and Legacy Village are the two premier spots. It's like, hey, this is kind of away from some of the bad areas in South Bend. The floors aren't sticky. You're not worried about collapsing through the staircase. Quality places. So
you didn't live there, I assume.
I lived in Legacy Village, but I didn't live with any lacrosse players. So all these NARPs that were like, hey, guys, we're sophomores. We got to figure out what we're doing for senior year. I'm like, yeah, dude, I'll go with you. And it was fantastic. And that's how they talked. That was Matt Albano's impression. Hey, guys, I'm Matt Albano.
Was he involved in Positive Friday?
Yeah, that's the whole group chat. That's where Positive Friday started. We were being so mean to each other, we had to start doing Positive Friday. Congrats on the future kid, Matt. So 2024 schedule. And a lot of these games, like the way that I'm thinking about these over-unders, is simply by guaranteed wins, guaranteed losses, and then kind of where some of those middle ground fall. I would be remiss if this didn't draw back a little bit of that. I understand that we want to play a hard schedule. I understand not wanting to play as many games as Duke, for example, but can we put a couple more patsies on there? So I'm still confident that Notre Dame has the over, simply because, like, the Cleveland State, Marquette, I don't think Georgetown's good enough to make the serious run. I see.
Let me take a quick time out and just point out how terrible of a host you are. You have to say a combination of how many games they're playing. Notre Dame is playing 11, and what the over under is. And according to Zach Capozzi, it's 7.5. So you are taking the over 7.5. You think they're going to win 8 games.
Yeah.
So 8-3 at the worst, and you're calling it a lock.
Yeah, I am calling it a lock. And let me just say, if we started with Richmond, I had like everything that you were talking about ready to go. And then you're like, we're starting with Notre Dame. And I'm like, we're going to win every game. It's going to be great. I love it. Everything's awesome. So potentially bad host for you. And
true.
Really,
yeah, no.
Hear.
Bad producer. Because I pulled the quick audible on you.
Bad producer. Hey, let's start off the idiot with something that he loves. Okay. So I have it as the over. And a lot of that is because I'm confident. Just like Liam was saying about how, hey, we don't win the national championship, we win the day. I think that was a mistake that was made in 2021 when Donna steamrolled us to keep us out of the playoffs. And that is still relatively fresh. So making sure that you take care of business against the quality but lesser opponents of Ohio State, Michigan, Syracuse, UNC. I see all four of those being winnable. I don't see four losses easily on this schedule. And that's why I think it's an absolute lock.
Okay. I am going to go over as well. And I am not, I literally don't, it's not a lock for me. I wrote, I'm going over, but I don't love it.
Mm-hmm.
And it's because of what you just said. I mean, there's a relatively small margin, right? You know, the difference between losing 3 games and 4 games is legitimately the difference between, you know, the 22 season and, I don't know, the 23 season, I guess. Like, obviously, the two of those were against Virginia, and those were the only two. But still, like, it's a narrow one for me because, the Cornell on April 14th matchup stands out as being, you know, the respite, so to speak, in the midst of the ACC schedule. That's not a respite. That's another very, very difficult game.
Well, and we'll talk about this in a little bit, but like I like doing this by team. What's your threat level? If you're Notre Dame, what's your threat level of Syracuse and UNC? They weren't very good last year. Syracuse made it, they're kind of scary. Are they mature enough to be scary? Is UNC even on the radar? Are they just, you know, in the dumps?
No, I actually think this plays nicely into Notre Dame's favor because I'm a huge believer in teams having teams' number. And traditionally, historically, Notre Dame has Syracuse's number and Carolina has Notre Dame's number. And I think that Syracuse is going to be more improved than Carolina is. So I think Notre Dame is going to beat Syracuse because Notre Dame beat Syracuse. Jake Taylor's going to score 7 goals or whatever. And then I think Notre Dame is going to beat Carolina because I don't think Carolina is going to be enough better than they were last year, even though, you know, again, on that kind of 10-15-year historical arc, I think
perfect.
North Carolina's had a little bit of the, you know, benefit of that series.
We agree. So we're in agreement. It's the over.
Agreement.
Let's go.
I'm going to do you a favor. Let's just typewriter all the way back to number 20, and then we'll go from 20 to 2.
Well, that sounds like a plan to me. I'll let you kick it off because you're going to be like, oh, Nick, you didn't say the right numbers. Nerd.
Richmond, they are scheduled to play 14 games. Their over-under, according to Lax reference, is 8.5.
That's interesting to me. So I look at the, we'll call it guaranteed losses. I don't mean that in an insulting way, but games that I expect them to lose. Virginia, Duke, Georgetown, I think you can schedule in there, and Maryland. That's four. Yeah. Are we really expecting them to lose, you know, three additional games beyond that? They have some tough opponents, you know, High Point, UMass, St. Joe's. I think the last half of their schedule is pretty tough. But in the same way that you're kind of a believer of teams having other teams' numbers, I'm kind of a believer in there are a couple teams where if I put my Notre Dame hat on, I'm thinking like, I really don't want to see them because they're too good to get the recognition of the 15 through 10 spot. But that's the trap game, and that's a dangerous team. And I think Richmond has served that great in the last 10 years. So I don't see them losing three additional games, and I wouldn't be surprised if they can snag one against Maryland's their first game. There's nothing on film. Who knows what they're going to be doing? You know, Duke's been known to drop a couple games. Granted, that one's in March and not February. So I'm very confident in this over as well. My two locks are Notre Dame and Virginia, or Notre Dame and Richmond for hitting the over.
Yeah, I'm going over as well. And I looked at it pretty much the same way, which is if they go 1-3 versus Maryland, Virginia, Duke, and Georgetown, and then 1-2 versus High Point, UMass, and St. Joe's, that's enough based on the likelihood that they're going to be favored in their other games in order for the over to hit. Moving on, Penn. The Quakers are coming off of a season in which they finished, I believe they went, they finished 8-6, but one of those, I don't remember. Yeah. In any case, 13 games over under 7.5. They won 7 games last year. And to me, this is a typical Mike Murphy schedule. I mean, he does a better job of manipulating his schedule to maximize the RPI better than anybody. And playing Penn has been, you know, an RPI benefit lock since like 2013 or something like that. There is, in my opinion, not a single no-brainer win on this schedule. And so even though I think it's very realistic they go over, I'm picking under because it might be a 51% situation, but I think the odds are better that they end up winning fewer than 8 games.
I disagree only in the sense that I'm more firmly on the under. I think that Penn, the schedule that they have set up, I mean, you just look at it, there's no easy win. And there's a lot of really dangerous threats. Even the first 3 games, Georgetown, Albany, Delaware. I don't think Delaware is getting the respect that they deserve. I think they sneak one past Penn. And then you go Duke, UNC, Villanova. Like, I just don't see a way in which the talent that they've lost and the talent that they're developing consistently gets to an, you know, 8-5 season. I think they're about a 500 team. You know, I think it's 7-6 or 6-7. And no offense to them, but I don't see this season going particularly well for them.
Yeah, I mean, you know, it's a tough one in the sense that no Ivy League team is going to be bereft of talent ever. You know, they do have a couple of really intriguing young guys, Leo Hoffman at the midfield specifically, but he's coming off of a summer in which he was rehabbing an injury that I think held him out for, if not all, then most of the fall as well. But, you know, on top of that, the biggest, you know, you can make an argument that no team is going to change or be as different because of the loss of a single player as Penn is with Sam Hanley's graduation. You know, maybe Cornell with no more Gavin Adler, but even still, I would say that Hanley's departure is more significant. So yeah, I think that we're in alignment. Understand where you're coming from in terms of the strength of that one. I should also note, we kind of disregarded that the juice is not the same on all of these, right? Some of them are, you know, minus or plus 115. Others, you know, are a little heavier. That's a reflection of where the betting money is coming in. You know, the houses typically don't want to change the numbers so that they can then, you know, create arbitrage opportunities and middles. So what they end up doing is just if the betting money comes in heavy on one side, they just change the vig that they take on whether or not your bet wins and what gets paid out if your bet wins, in order to disincentivize some of that. So we're just considering this on a straight up and down basis, not on a not on a value basis. Moving on, number 18, Boston University. 14 games, over under 9.5. I'm going under. What say you?
I am taking the over by a slim margin. And in the way that you just described, Penn, I'm 51% confident that Boston hits the over. Taking another peek at their schedule, I see a couple, you know, they're playing Army, they're playing Duke, they're playing Yale, and they need five losses to hit the under. I'm struggling to see where that second loss comes from. I think this is a dangerous team. I don't see them having a crazy level of success, but I also don't see them in the same way that I see Penn losing a lot of those 50-50s and, you know, a lot of these kind of coin toss games. I see Boston being able to separate themselves from a St. Joe's. I think that's a win, whereas with some other teams, it would be a loss. And I just see them losing one more as opposed to two more outside of the guaranteed loss. Why are you on the under?
Because I think they're going to be heavy favorites in five or six of their conference games. And that obviously sets a very high floor. If they're, you know, likely to be favored, and Navy's probably like the swing game in that situation, you know, which was not a good game for them last year, if memory serves, then obviously, you know, you only have to win four more games in order to get there. I look at their opening schedule of St. Joe's, Vermont, Bryant, and Brown, and I see all those as being not coin toss, but I'll put it this way. I wouldn't be shocked. I'd be surprised, but I would not be shocked if BU went 0-4 or 4-0 against that slate. Now, if they middle that, you already made the point. Like, you look at Loyola, Army, Duke, and Yale. If they go 0-4 against those four teams, then, and they you know, they did beat Loyola, but they also lost to them last year. Army is a top 10 team. Duke and Yale are top 10 teams. It's not unrealistic that they would go 0-4 against that stretch. Then they have to go undefeated the rest of the way in order to win it. So that's why I go under.
Fair enough. I'm curious to hear you say that you're not, you wouldn't be surprised. Well, you would be surprised, but not shocked to see them go 0-4. I would be shocked if they lost Vermont, Bryant, Brown, you, like not scraping one of those, that would be an eye opener, and I'd write off the entire rest of the season for them. So yeah, maybe no, something I mean, to that's... keep an eye on. Maybe, hey, we're not proposing that we gamble, but maybe we put a little beer on it. Maybe a non-alcoholic beer.
A non-alcoholic beer, for sure. North Carolina, over under 8.5 with 14 games on their schedule.
This one's tough. That's a low line for me. I mean, you look at their schedule. We've already talked about how you don't think they've improved enough to capture a team like Notre Dame or surprise anybody. I'm firmly in that same boat. That being said, I think they beat a team like Penn. I have them, I would say, appropriately ranked, you know, as the 17th team in the nation. So looking at their schedule, losses to, I'm assuming, Hopkins, Princeton, Army, Virginia, Syracuse, Notre Dame, Duke. That, again, kind of puts them right at that teetering spot. But I think they lose a sneaky one and ultimately have another relatively disappointing season. And that's that. And I don't like him in general, Terry. So maybe that's my bias coming out. I'm sure they're fine people now. Back in the day, not. So
I am going over. You know, I think they have six games in which they'll be favorites to significant favorites, which means that they have to win three versus Hopkins, Princeton, Penn, Army, Virginia, Syracuse, Notre Dame, and Duke. I don't think it's a foregone conclusion, but I do think that the odds are better that they go at least 3-5 versus going 2-6 or worse. So that's why I'm going over.
Pick, call your shots on the three teams they beat. I want to hear it. Penn?
Princeton, Penn, Army.
Ooh, slanderous towards the Ivy League, and we all know how much we love to slander the Ivy League after they rigged the election in 2021. So
2022.
Sorry.
Remember,
sorry.
They sat out the election in 2021.
Yeah. And then you're going to hear typing in the background a little bit, pulling up all these schedules on the fly. That's what makes the difference in this show. So listener, if you hear, hey, why are you guys typing? Hey, why don't you shut it? All right. You try looking at all these schedules. So
I'm in a similar boat. I made it through. It was kind of funny that I played myself when I like said we should start open at number one. Yeah. Because yeah. I had started from the bottom. I'd gotten from 20 to 8. And then I was like really relying on you to ask questions and Liam to have extended answers in order for me to like start to clean up the top 10.
Well, I thought we only had him for like 15, 20 minutes. And if I knew that, I almost wanted to ask him like, you know, where are you headed after this? And he's like, oh, you know, my first class is in 2 hours. I would have been like, well, then get comfortable, get a snack. I'm grilling you. So I was ready to go 1 through 20, and then we're backpedaling. But that's the difference maker here. We're really yin-yanging each other.
Delaware, over under 8.5 with 12 games on their schedule. I'm going under. I actually find it odd that they reduced the number of games that they played. They played 14 last year, ended up playing 18. They were in the playing game, which I know was frustrating for them and that staff. Wait, did I say, or yeah, I'm going over.
Oh,
I said under, but I'm looking at this a second time. I'm going
that
over.
It is an election year, classic flip-flop Terry. That was your name in college, I heard.
They can go 0-3 versus Penn, Michigan, and Syracuse and still hit the number. And they're probably more likely to win one of those games than not. So I think there's a little bit of a cushion. So I'm going over on the Blue Hens.
This was my third place over lock. Okay. I think Delaware is a pretty damn good team. And I think they go 1-2 against Penn, Michigan, Syracuse. If I had to call my shot, I think they upset Michigan. I'm pretty low on Michigan right now. So if they manage to win that game, I think they've separated themselves from the Delawares of years past. Like when I was in high school, Delaware was kind of,
down.
Yeah. But
yeah,
I think
like
they're
they
starting
were really good in, yeah, 2008, 9, 7, 8, 9, somewhere in that range. And then, you know, started to kind of become less consistent in the early part of the 2010s.
And in the same way that I was talking about Richmond, I think Delaware is firmly on every team's radar as a, you know, we can't pretend that this is a down year for Delaware, or that we just have the raw talent, or that we have anything that you tell yourself going into a game. So I think Delaware surprises a good amount of people this year, and I am firmly on the over for them.
Rutgers scheduling 13 games, same number as they played last year. Their over under is 8.5.
I mean, this one's tough for me, and let me just try to pull up their schedule on the fly.
You need me to talk longer so that you can get to it.
Yeah, and again,
all right,
I just
have I'm
like
going
15
under,
tabs open and I can't find anything.
I'm going under because similar to Boston University in that they have a ton of coin flip games on their schedule, I think they'll only be heavily favored to win two, maybe three games. And so that 5.5-game, 6.5-game gap between where I think they're going to be heavily favored and you know all the rest of them, that just seems like bad value when you analyze them.
Let me just ask you a question more on something that I'm excited to watch play out this year. Conference play for Rutgers. You know, Hopkins, Ohio State, Michigan, Maryland, Penn State, Rutgers. Who do you have in the upper echelon versus the like lower tier?
Yeah, I think Ohio State and Rutgers are pretty clearly 5 and 6. I don't really see reason based on what happened either recruiting or transfer-wise that you would expect them to kind of advance upon the position that they were in last year. I mean, you can make a better argument for Ohio State in the sense that, you know, they obviously played Maryland really tough. After Drew Blanchard got hurt, they struggled so much at the faceoff X that it was hard to evaluate the rest of the roster. And they brought in Tommy Burke to address that, which was, you know, potentially arguably their biggest concern. But I do think also that in losing Jack Myers, they don't have enough known quantities on offense for me to feel good about the compounding improvement between addressing their face-off situation versus not. So,
and then
go on.
What's the gap between Ohio State Rutgers and your fourth, which I would assume Michigan?
So the way I see it is, I do think, you know, Maryland deserves the benefit of the doubt, in my opinion. I don't know how to properly frame 2023. I think that, you know, you look at their results and you look at the product on the field, and it's easy to overreact to. So I guess my point is, so this is the way that I see it, and this is actually how I'm going to kind of create and structure the poll that I'm writing for a week from Monday, a week from when this podcast comes out, which is looking at it from a championship odds or championship tier standpoint. I think it's pretty clear and obvious that Notre Dame, Duke, Virginia should be the top three. I have Maryland fourth. And ooh, I think you can make an argument that they belong in the tier with them. Now, that relies on Eric Molliver being awesome and Braden Urksa being meaningfully improved over last year on the basis of a combination of his own improvement from freshman to sophomore year, as well as not being the sole quarterback for the team. I think that, you know, those guys in a two quarterback system with those midfield shooters, I mean, you look at the decline in shooting percentage that Owen Murphy and Jack Brennan had from 22 to 23, and you can make an argument, or at least I think you can make an argument that, I mean, they went from like 39% to like 26 and 19% or 29 and 16% respectively. I mean, it was steep and significant. And basically I just see, you know, Urksa and Molliver are going to be the facilitators, whether that means that like what their assist making through dodging to pass versus like passing to assist, which I know that kind of sounds like a dumb, not really significant distinction, but I think it's actually a huge distinction. And I think Maryland in 22 was one of the best assist making teams without having to have really athletic dodgers who were able to win matchups in the history of the sport. And I think that that's even more dramatic when you consider how their offense ranked historically, which potentially is the best ever, and that they didn't really have not just a primary initiating dodger, but even like, you know, their second and third dodgers were like, you know, Jonathan Donville, who is a great player, but not somebody that athletically scares you that tremendously. And so all of that is a way of saying that, you know, if they can rediscover the ball movement they had in 22, I think that those middies in their shooting can more than overcome whatever type of deficit. They have Luke Wehrman back at the faceoff X. They get Logan McNanny back in goal. And they have to replace Brett Makar. But, I mean, it's Maryland. I'm not that concerned about Maryland finding a defenseman on their roster who's going to be awesome. So all of that is a long way of saying that I think Maryland is you know, at the top. And then I think that I would pick Hopkins. I voted Hopkins to be second. But I think Hopkins, Penn State, Michigan, in that order, are pretty tightly clustered. And potentially Maryland is actually closer to those four than they are to the top three. I think that's kind of the story of the season. I also think that relative to last year, or at least relative to 22, the gap between the best teams and the next best teams, so basically the top three or four, and then four or five through like 15, is pretty narrow. That gap is actually because you know, Notre Dame, Duke, and Virginia, like, they all have flaws. None of them, I think, are as complete personnel wise as they were last year. I mean, just look at, you know, I do think Notre Dame has some questions in their close defense. You know, they don't have any questions offensively. They have too much depth at the offensive midfield spots, and their biggest question at attack is Pat Kavanaugh's health. But relative to Jake Taylor's health the last 2 years, at least we know that Pat is walking, right? He's not coming back from an ACL tear. He's coming back from a hip and shoulder labrum. So, I'm confident in his ability to get back. But, you know, Duke has some questions in the midfield. I think they're going to be answered in the positive. And then Virginia has questions in the midfield as well. So, yeah.
Your ability to just know rosters year over year change, because a lot of the ways, like, and I don't know if I was gaslighting myself or if I'm just an idiot, but for most of these over-unders, I was like, yeah, you know, there's some departing talent from that team. They're not going to be very good. I applied that same thing to Penn as I was kind of doing to Maryland. And your ability to know who else is in the chamber ready to reload is, I would say, unparalleled with anybody in the world. Congratulations on being good at your job. All that's to say, I am going to hit the under on Rutgers, especially with the Army Loyola Princeton. Credit to me for throwing Loyola in with those two. I don't know if they quite deserve that respect, but I don't see them having enough automatic wins or even, you know, not even automatic, just favorite wins before Hopkins, Ohio State, Michigan, Maryland, Penn State. I don't see that going well for them. I am firmly on the Rutgers under.
Princeton, over under 8.5, 13 games on their schedule. I like the over. I think they'll be favorites in four games, and then I like them to go 5-4 or better in the other nine.
Yep. I don't think they beat Duke and Cornell, and Maryland, sorry. And I have a lot of other wins on their schedule. We could do the same walk with the Ivy League, but I think, you know, Princeton, Cornell, Yale, clear top three. And then so looking at, you know, Dartmouth, Brown, Penn on their schedule, I think they take care of business and maybe split it with Cornell and Yale. So over.
Denver, over under of 7.5, 13 games on their schedule. Matt Brown beefed it up a little bit. I'm going to go over. I do think Denver is a little overranked at 13, but I like them to get to 8 wins against this schedule.
I got to take the under. And what was surprising is when I looked at you know, the lines coming out, I'm like, damn, they don't think Denver wins almost half their games. You know, it's a 13-game schedule, and it's 7.5. And I'm like, are they really about to go around 500? And the more I look at it, Navy's a scary game. Hopkins loss, Cornell, Yale, Duke, Georgetown. And these losses just started stacking up. And I don't think they've separated themselves from some of the slip-ups that they have had in the past couple years where Villanova used to be guaranteed win for them. No disrespect to Villanova. A Marquette, an Air Force. I think they drop one weird one, which plants them in the under.
Just to clean something up for you, that Navy game is actually a scrimmage that they already played. It was this past weekend. Check out InsideLacrosse.com. Your boys Patrick McEwen and Dan Kaplan were there, and they wrote it up. They came away a little concerned about the offensive personnel. Now, granted, it was clear that J.J. Silstrop was not putting the pedal to the metal, and he does have the ability to unlock a lot of things for them. Michael Lampert was kind of the catalyst offensively, or at least the quarterback, if not the catalyst. The catalyst, it sounded like, was actually prospectively going to be a fellow St. Ignatius, Ohio Wildcat alum, Drew Weinacher. I think he's a redshirt freshman. He might be a sophomore. I'm not positive. But he was a lefty bomber coming out of the box for the Pios. So keep an eye on him. If you're working on your fantasy lineup, you might want to target Drew Weinacher, who apparently might be a first line midi out there in the
right. You can call me an idiot, right? Because I'm just looking at these schedules and I'm like, there's no way that, like, why are they playing Navy? And then it's like, oh, that was a scrimmage that already happened. You can call me a dipshit on this. This is your thing. You can do that. Because I feel like one now.
It's all good. I don't think it changes. I don't think it should change your point, though, because obviously in that instance, you were just looking at what would have otherwise been an over-under of 8.5 on a 14-game schedule. So, you know, whatever. I think you're fine.
Okay. Thanks. Thank you.
Number 12, Georgetown.
Over-under
of 10.5 on a 13-game schedule. I'm going under, and I am going heavy under. This is my under lock. They could start 1-3 and this thing could be over by March. I do think that there is some hidden value in this Georgetown Hoya team. I do not think that it's prudent to put American dollars, US currency, on them getting to 11 wins.
Hopkins, Notre Dame, two losses for Georgetown, and I'm confident in that. And just like you're saying, I'm not confident enough in Georgetown to go flawless through the rest of their season. I mean, you mentioned it, starting at Loyola, their very first game of the year, very reasonably, nobody would be surprised if that's a loss, and they're supposed to play perfect the rest of the year. I don't see it. No way, no how. I'm taking the under as well.
Michigan, Over under 7.5, 13 games on their schedule. Let me just check this because this is head scratching to me. Yeah, that's right. I am going so heavy over on this. This is my lock. And now that I look at it, yeah, this is the biggest juice on the over. This is a minus 165. That is far. I mean, there's a minus 150. Oh, no, I take it back. Jacksonville, who we're not going to talk about because they are not in the top 20. They're a minus 175 and they're over. They're a 10.5 on 15 games. But yeah, Michigan, I mean, you know, it's obviously like how they play against the Big Ten is going to have a significant factor in this. But when you look at their non-conference schedule, I mean, there are enough wins. They're not going to get to 8 wins out of conference, but you know, there are enough wins there that they don't have to light the world on fire in the Big Ten in order to go over.
Yep. Unfortunately, we agree. This was my lock for the over. And when I saw the 7.5 for 13, I was like, huh, that must be a pretty tough schedule. Like, wonder what's going on there. Virginia, Notre Dame, losses, Big Ten. I don't see a way in which they get to 6 losses. I think they've separated themselves from Delaware. I don't think Jacksonville's a threat to them. Canisius Hobart Marquette, thanks for coming out. Appreciate the travel. Harvard, thanks a lot. So, like, 2 losses, Notre Dame, Virginia, and then we can maybe assume Maryland and Hopkins. Are we really going to assume Penn State, Rutgers, and Ohio State? They go 1-3 or 1-2. I am not. Michigan over. Responsibly bet your house and your kids' college tuition on it.
Yale, over under 11.5. They're playing 14 games. I'm going over. This is a big number. So I wouldn't question anybody that wanted to go under. But I like the way that their most challenging games are spaced out with some games that they'll be pretty heavily favored in, kind of sandwiched in. I think that, you know, Yale was an interesting schedule and an at-large pick last year because, you know, they didn't play a heavy Big Ten ACC schedule. And so, you know, on paper, you might wonder, like, do they have enough to not win the Ivy League tournament and get in? But they got fortunate with the seasons that a lot of their traditional opponents had in terms of being, you know, kind of number one seed in their conference or whatever the case may be. So it's a tightrope. It's not a tightrope from the standpoint of the over-under. It's a tightrope from the standpoint of whether or not this schedule is going to be good enough in 2024 in order to get them an at-large bid to the NCAA tournament. What say you on the Bulldogs?
I have the over as well. I hate it. You know, is what it is. But I hate that I'm just parroting a lot of your talking points, but taking a look at their schedule, this is close to an ideal schedule if I'm looking at it from a player perspective. A lot of times you see, like, you know, Big Ten, ACC, Ivies, Patsies to start, and then a gauntlet to end. And so even the way that they're starting out with Villanova, Colgate, Penn State, DU, Harvard, Cornell, that's good quality opponents. You're not going to be able to take your foot completely off the gas, but you're going to have a good schedule to make sure that it's not just the gauntlet. Because I think that Yale isn't good enough to survive, let alone thrive, inside of a gauntlet. I think that they would, if they lost one game, it would be a cascading waterfall effect, let alone, you know, one person on their team goes down or needs to take a game or two off that they wouldn't otherwise be able to afford. So going to be interesting. I'm taking them with the over, but I'm not too happy about it.
Syracuse. This is going to be an interesting one. 15 games on their schedule, over under 9.5. I'm going over. I think they're going to be favored in 8 games at least. So I feel like that's a pretty small margin. A pretty wide margin. Like, you know, they if in their remaining 7 games, they only have to go 2-5. Last year, I was very confident in how their season was going to unfold. And to pat myself on the back, it unfolded almost exactly the way I expected it to. From the standpoint of, you know, I thought that they were going to be kind of middling out of the gate. And I think that that's what they were. And then I felt like because they were going to be so reliant on freshmen, they were going to hit the wall. I don't see that being the case this year. I think that their freshmen being sophomores, now understanding the physical demands of a college lacrosse season and what you need when the calendar turns to April, is going to be in their benefit. And I also think that their grad transfers are winners, guys that know how to win games. And so I think that that is also going to come to fruition. For me, you know, I think that Syracuse is very, very likely to make the NCAA tournament. I would pick them out of the gate to win a first round game. For me, their season is defined by their quarterfinal, right? And whether or not they can, you know, win the game in the most pivotal weekend the sport has in order to get back to the Final Four. I think that the Orange are staring down the barrel of a really interesting season. I have them. I believe I had them at 9, which is where the media has them as well. When I started to forecast this season, I had them at 5. And then I dinged them because I'm concerned about their homegrown leadership. And that was it was one of the two things that I wrote about in the season preview article about Syracuse that's in this face-off yearbook. And I talked to Max Rosa, a short stick D-Mitty who's a captain on the team, about how integrating guys like Jake Stevens, Sammy English, Christian Mule has been. And he had a lot of good stuff to say. So check out that article. It gave me a little bit of confidence that, you know, my concern is not going to be what derails their season.
I think I'm going to take the under. They need 6 losses for an under. I think they find that on their schedule. I think I'm a little bit down on Syracuse this year, and then we'll have them in the top 3 for my poll for next year. And I think that understanding the physical demands, yep, credit for that. Knowing and having a better maturity, yep, credit for that. I still don't want to discount a lot of their talent being sophomores. I mean, sophomores is not the level of maturity. Something goes wrong, hard to get back on track. I think they let a couple games escape them, not to the extent that they did last year. I don't think that talent is developed enough to just raw win games with talent. So I think they lose to Maryland. I think they lose to Army, Duke, Notre Dame, Virginia, Cornell. I think those 6 losses, with some of them being like OT thrillers that they probably should have won. It's like a respectful 6, a gentleman's 6. By no means is this my lock, but let's keep an eye on Syracuse this year and then really watch out for them next year. That's kind of where I'm at.
Army, over under 10.5, 13 games on their schedule. It's the same thing we talked about with Georgetown. Those are the same numbers as Georgetown. I love Army. I love this roster. They bring back so much. But I'm going under because there just isn't enough margin in this number. You know, so there are good teams on their schedule. Syracuse is back on the schedule. Thank God. That travesty is no longer our long national nightmare is over. But even within the conference, I mean, Loyola and Boston University are formidable foes. And even in years that Army is awesome, the Navy game is a toss-up. So, you know, I mean, before you even look at some of their other challenging non-conference games, I think it's reasonable to go under.
I'm going to be a Patriot, and I'm going to take the over. And I don't want you disrespecting the troops like you just did, Terry. The reason,
but
I'm
I respected
doing it,
the midshipmen. So is that? I don't know. Does that offset it?
I don't know. We'll let President Byron decide that. but the thing that interests me is the respect that you're giving Boston and who else did
Loyola?
You say? Boston and Loyola. I don't see Army losing either one of those. I'm pretty high on Army this year. I mean, what a run they had last year, reloading in the right way. I don't think Boston and Loyola have really gotten that same level that of consistency and reloading that Army reloading. So I see the Navy game being a toss-up, but I really only see – I don't see them losing to UNC. I see them beating Syracuse, quite frankly. And I'm going to be a total patriot and take the over with – one loss coming to Navy in a head scratcher. That's awesome. And everybody's all fired up about it. And then one loss coming to the rest of the schedule. And that's a dumb prediction, but I love predicting for service academies. Let's go, fellas, kick everybody's ass and then drop a weird one to Navy and then have to sing a song after.
Cornell over under 9.5. They are scheduled to play 13 games. I'm going under. They have to go at least 5-3 versus Denver, Ohio State, Penn State, Princeton, Yale, Penn, Syracuse, Notre Dame. And that's not even including some of their other challenging games on their schedule, like Harvard and other teams that could very easily sneak up and bite them. That is a tall order. I just don't expect them to do it. So I'm going under with the Big Red, even though I think they're going to be good.
Yep, going with the under. And in the same way that I'm confident in some aspects about Yale, they had a lot more cushion. They were playing 11 games, and that was 7.5. Cornell, 13 games, 9.5. More chances to find some losses. I think the Ivy might get a little bit of a pig slop, pig fight. Harvard makes some noise. Somebody drops a game to Brown. I don't think the Ivy League is as here's the clear top and here's the clear bottom outside of Dartmouth. Sorry, Dartmouth. As, you know, Maryland is from the rest of the Big Ten. I think there's more upset potential, and that's why I am going under.
It's interesting that you said that, because Maryland is up next. Their over-under is 8.5 with 12 games on their schedule, and I'm going under because pretty much the same reason. They'll be favored likely versus Richmond, Loyola, and Brown, but there is no game on this schedule that I would be surprised to see Maryland lose. So even if they went 8-4, I think you'd still look at it and say that's a pretty good season, regardless of who those four losses are to, and they're positioned well going into the Big Ten tournament, and et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. But at the same time, they go 8-4, it's under. So I'm going under with the Terps.
Well, and it's interesting because they're six, and then we have two Big Ten teams coming up next in Hopkins and Penn State. So it's kind of like whatever you decide that happens with Maryland is going to affect the next two teams that we talk about. I'm taking the Maryland over. I think this is a year where they beat Hopkins, they beat Penn State, and they kind of become that clear, like, either it's going to be Duke, Virginia, Notre Dame, Maryland, but Maryland kind of finds a way where, regardless of what happens with the top three, it's like, oh, it's Duke and Maryland and Notre Dame or something like that. I think that they're probably a little pissed off and ready to come back and run a gauntlet. And so I'm taking the Maryland over, and I'm kind of taking them to not dominate the Big Ten, but not find any losses where there should be wins.
So Hopkins, their over-under is 7.5. They're playing 13 games. I'm going over basically for the exact opposite reason that I went under on Maryland and Cornell, which is, you know, that 5.5 game cushion is wider than the 3.5 or 4.5 game cushion, 3.5 game cushion, excuse me. In addition to, you know, with Hopkins hosting Denver, Towson, and Loyola and Navy, I think that you can be pretty confident in those four wins when you're looking at this team from the outset, which just means that they need to find four more wins on their schedule with Georgetown, Carolina, Virginia, Syracuse, Rutgers, Michigan, Ohio State, Penn State, and Maryland. So I think that that's a much more doable task.
And it's interesting because I kind of preface with, like, I'm high on Maryland, which means theoretically I should be choosing the Hopkins under, but just like you said, that cushion, I mean, 13 games and they need to win eight of them. I mean, that's a pretty doable, it's a reasonable ask. And even though the Maryland line is tighter and it speaks more that I'm taking the over for Maryland than it does that I'm taking the over for Hopkins, I'm still taking it nonetheless.
The last Big Ten team, you already mentioned it, Penn State, over under 8.5, 12 games. So same number as Maryland. And I'm going under because I've already explained my points of view on Maryland and the composition and breakdown of the Big Ten. But with Penn State specifically, you know, I think that there's a realistic chance that they might have more talent but less vibes this season relative to last year. I think it strikes me that it's hard to overstate the role that Jack Traynor played from an emotional leadership standpoint and holding his teammates accountable. And then similarly, like Jack Posey coming off the ACL, you know, there's a lot of defensive talent there, but at the same time, like, you know, what's it going to be? Now, with that being said, you know, TJ Malone is awesome. I think Matt Traynor is going to have a big year moving from midfield to attack. And I think Kyle Lehman's going to have a big year as a freshman. And at the other end of the field, Jack Fracian, you know, might be the second best goalie, only behind the guy that we had earlier on this podcast. And so, you know, if they were to go 9-3 against this schedule, I wouldn't be shocked. But when it comes to when it comes to picking. And the other thing I'll say is, like, you know, they open up with Colgate, Villanova, Stony Brook, Navy. Very realistic they're going to be 4-0 hosting Yale. And then they host Cornell, and then they play Marquette on St. Patrick's Day weekend, that being a game that they lost last year in somewhat head-scratching fashion. But point being that, like, you know, they could be 7-0 heading into Big Ten play and need just two wins in order to go over, and I'm going to look like an idiot. But that being said, I'm going to stick with the under.
Yep, I have them on the under. I'm very excited to see how their scrimmage versus Army goes. What is that, tomorrow?
Yeah. I was thinking about going, but it takes me like 3.5 hours to drive to State College. So it's 7 hours in the car for a 2-hour scrimmage, and I just can't justify it on the last weekend when I'm not going to be responsible for being tied to my desk for 14 hours on a Saturday.
Yeah, yeah. Got to take care of your bread and mentals, King. So in the same way that I was talking about Hopkins and Maryland kind of not really dropping any games, I think Penn State, you rely on the goalie. You have preseason notions of what you're going to be able to do. I just don't see them having that same roster depth. I don't see them having the front six in front of Frasion. Frasion, it's like a little French term. I don't see them having that same level of dominance. And it was kind of interesting to see them ranked ahead of Hopkins and Maryland kind of in these just the list and the preseason rankings and whatnot. So I do think they find a way to hit the under and still have a relatively successful season, just losing to a Maryland, potentially losing to a Hopkins, and then dropping one to Yale and or Cornell. You can still have a good season, make some noise in the tournament, and I'm not confident enough to take the over, though.
Virginia, 11.5, 14 games. I'm going over. I think they've got 5 games that they'll be heavily favored, and of course you can pencil in that 6th win against Notre Dame in the season finale, because that's all Virginia does is beat Notre Dame in the regular season. I think that there's an edge to this team. You know, they obviously had their season end in the semifinals in overtime last year and had a coaching change. I feel like the guys on this team feel like they've got something to prove.
Yep, 100%. I think one of the early calling it game of the year is going to be their at Maryland. And what excites me most about that is, in the same way that it was last year, it's kind of like a litmus test for Duke, Notre Dame, Virginia. And if Maryland and if anybody can crack that top three, I think Maryland has the best chance to do it. And so I'm going to put a lot of weight on the Big Ten for how Maryland performs against Virginia early on. That being said, we need to find 3 losses on this schedule. I don't see that happening. I see potentially one to Maryland and I see one to Duke. And I think
going to lose to Duke, because that's the other thing that happens.
It's just going to be Virginia loses to Duke. It's just going to be 3 snakes all eating each other's tail in a circle, I think. Correct. And I think that accounts for 2 losses, not 3. I'm taking the Virginia over.
So I should have mentioned, because I don't know if you know this, but Duke and Maryland scrimmaged last weekend. And now, speaking to folks on both sides, it was pretty clear going into this game that Maryland was going to take it a lot more seriously and play their starters a lot deeper into the game. But Duke did play their starters for the first half, and Maryland won. So, you know, not going to put a ton of stock in scrimmage scores, but the Terps look good. And it's a good segue into our number 2 team, the last team that we're going to talk about. And then we are going to let our listeners get on with their days. The Duke Blue Devils, defending runners up, 12.5 over under for 15 games. And I'm going under.
You're going under. Who? Going under. Where are you finding those losses?
So it is Notre interesting. Dame. So Jacksonville, probably, right? Either High Point or Jacksonville. Yeah. At Loyola, right? They lose that game more often than they win. At Syracuse, Jonathan Oski hates flying to Syracuse. And Notre Dame.
You're having a 4-loss season for Duke?
Yeah.
Or are you saying that, those four games will account for three?
No, those four games will account for three.
Okay. I, you know what? I'm going to make the most ridiculous prediction of all time. I don't think Duke drops a stinker in February. And I have...
We've already talked about how disrespectful you are to history and how I, a student of history, have to continuously remind you of how foolish that is.
If I was the president, we'd still be in World War II. I do not study history. I do not learn from my mistakes. I continue walking into the same brick wall. And I'll be like, we should really sanction the shit out of Germany after World War I. What's the worst thing that happens? Oops. So in the same way, Duke doesn't lose it this year. The economic recovery from Germany after World War I goes so smoothly. No negative ramifications from that. And I have Duke losing to Notre Dame. I think they finished the season at 1 with one loss on their schedule.
There's only no. Don't hedge that. Say they're going to go undefeated.
No. What? Pay attention to history. Duke never goes undefeated. No, I think they lose one, and here's why I think they lose. I think they get their shit kicked April 7th because it's the 2014 National Championship 10-year celebration, and if we learned anything from Syracuse's, we've been playing lacrosse for 100 years, but we forgot to learn how to play this year. Notre Dame just beat us by 50,000. I think we win by 55,000, ruining Duke's 2014 National Championship game. I'm going to be texting Jordan Wolf. I'm going to be texting Deemer Class, and I'm going to be saying, you guys are losers. Yeah, can I just hold your ring, please? How does it feel on your hand? And then we're going to go from there.
Steve Ocello's son, this was an awesome podcast.
I enjoyed it.
And not only that, we didn't even talk about the obscure military reference streak that you needed to continue, and you executed it seamlessly, flawlessly. Well done.
It's a beautiful thing, Terry. I tell you what, I'm getting ready to start. Let me just ask you one question, and maybe our viewers and voters can get involved on this. I'm going to start either Band of Brothers or the Pacific or some war series. Is Band of Brothers the place to start? Is there any place that anybody would recommend? Let me know in the comments.
I haven't watched it, so I don't know, but I will. I'm going to hit you with a pretty substantial brag. So I have read the first third of Killers of the Flower Moon over the last like 2 weeks, and I need to finish it on Saturday, because if I don't finish it on Saturday, I won't pick it up again until June, at which point I will have forgotten everything that happens, and I will never read it again, and I will never finish it. So I basically have 36 hours to read 200 pages of Osage, the development of the FBI. And I don't even know what else is going to happen over the course of the next 200 pages. So wish me luck.
Yeah, I'm close. But maybe we need to start the Inside Lacrosse Book Club. I'm reading The River Wye, and it's a beautiful book, and it's fiction, and just a guy fishing and figuring out life. And I'm like, I'm Gus Orviston. I'm a good fly fisherman. It's awesome. So maybe we can compare and contrast, decide on the next book that we're going to be reading together in season. It might have to be Hop on Pop. We're going to be a little short on time, but I still think it's worth discussing. So.
Nick, that'll do it for this edition of the Inside Lacrosse Podcast. Tailgate 1 in the books. Hopefully our responsible bettors listening to this one enjoyed a non-alcoholic beer while they were listening to it. We'll be back next week when we will have actual games to discuss. And who knows, maybe we're going to have guest number 3 in the history of the Tailgate Podcast, and we can only hope the conversation goes as well. Thank you to Liam Entman. Thank you to Robbie Hammond from Notre Dame for facilitating that interview. And if you like what you heard, leave a rating and review. We'll be back later in the week with more Inside Lacrosse podcasts.
Love you, Terry.
Love you, Nick.
Wouldn't it be funny if the surprise guest is just Liam Entman every time?